afternoon. The Secretary-General will preview the summit this week, and then, of course, he'll be very happy to take your questions.
Good afternoon. Tomorrow and Thursday, NATO leaders will meet here at our new headquarters. NATO embodies the bond between Europe and North America, which has kept our people safe and secure for almost 70 years. We are an alliance that exists to prevent conflict and preserve peace. We are an alliance that constantly adapts to a changing world. Above all, we are an alliance that delivers. At the summit, I expect we will deliver once again in strengthening our deterrence and defence, stepping up the fight against terrorism, and achieving fairer burden sharing. Investing in defence is a matter of credibility and fairness. That is why we will discuss defence spending and burden sharing tomorrow. In 2014, allies agreed to stop the cuts, start to increase, and move towards spending 2% of GDP on defence within a decade. Since then, we have made major progress, but we still have a long way to go, so we must redouble our efforts. Today, I can announce that we are releasing new 2018 defence spending estimates for each ally, and they are encouraging. They show that compared to 2014, all allies have stopped the cuts. All allies are increasing spending. Last year saw the biggest increase in a generation. And this year will be the fourth consecutive year of real increase in defence spending. The estimates also show that we expect eight allies to spend at least 2% of GDP on defence this year, compared to just three allies in 2014. Allies are also investing billions in new major equipment and stepping up their contributions to missions and operations. So we have reversed the trend. Before, the trend was down. Now it is up. For decades, our nations were cutting defense spending by billions of dollars. Now they're adding billions of dollars. I would like to thank all our nations for the efforts they are making to keep our defences strong in a more unpredictable world. And I would like to thank President Trump for his leadership on defence spending. It is clearly having an impact. Last year, on the President's initiative, we agreed to develop national plans to raise defence spending. Based on these plans, we estimate that European allies and Canada will add an extra $266 billion to defence between now and 2024. This is significant. Tomorrow, we will also take decisions to step up NATO's role in the fight against terrorism. We will launch a new training mission in Iraq with hundreds of NATO trainers. We will also help to set up military schools to increase the professionalism of Iraqi forces. This will be a non-combat mission, but it will help Iraq prevent the re-emergence of ISIS and other terrorist groups. We will also agree additional support for key partners in the Middle East and North Africa. We will increase our support for Tunisia with expert advice in areas including counter-terrorism and counter-improvised explosive devices. And we will step up our support for Jordan, including on cyber defence, counter-IDs and crisis management. Prevention is better than intervention, and helping our partners prevent and manage crises makes us all safer. To further strengthen our deterrence and defense, we will adopt a readiness initiative, the 430s. This is a commitment to have by 2020 30 mechanized battalions, 30 air squadrons, and 30 combat vessels ready to use within 30 days or less. We will agree a new command structure, including a new command for the Atlantic in Norfolk, Virginia, and another command for military mobility in Europe in Ulm, Germany. Military mobility involves moving troops and equipment quickly wherever they are needed. And over the last 4 years, NATO has invested over 2 billion euros in infrastructure, making this possible, including sea terminals, fuel containers, and runways. And tomorrow, through our close cooperation with Eurocontrol, we will also increase air mobility. Aircraft supporting NATO missions will be given a NATO call sign and receive priority handling by air traffic control in Europe, in peacetime and in crisis. Tomorrow, we will also discuss NATO's response to hybrid threats and agree to set up new counter-hybrid support teams to support allies at risk. Our strengthened defenses will extend into the cyber domain, with a new cyber operations center as part of the new NATO command structure, and the ability to draw on allies' national cyber capabilities in NATO missions and operations. Over dinner, we'll meet with our colleagues from Finland and Sweden, as well as the presidents of the European Union and the European Commission. Together, we will discuss the main security challenges confronting the transatlantic area, including challenges from the Middle East and North Africa, a more assertive Russia, and the situation on the Korean Peninsula. This morning, I met with President Tusk and President Juncker. We have just signed a new declaration setting out a shared vision for how NATO-EU cooperation can make us all stronger and safer, and contribute to fairer burden sharing. On Thursday, we will meet with the presidents of Georgia and Ukraine, two of our closest partners. Together, we will address regional challenges. We will also discuss the defense reforms and NATO's continuing support. We will close the summit with a meeting on Afghanistan, joined by our resident support partners. Our presence in Afghanistan is vital to ensuring the country never again becomes a safe haven for international terrorists. And allies are increasing their commitment, both in forces and in funding. We have added around 3,000 more trainers to our non-combat mission. At the summit, I expect we will also agree to extend funding for the Afghan forces beyond 2020. And we'll express our full support for President Ghani's bold peace initiative and his government's reforms. Finally, I expect that following last month's historic agreement on the name issue, we will agree to invite Skopje to start accession talks. Once the agreement is finalized and implemented, we will be able to invite the former Yugoslav Republic of Macedonia to become NATO's 30th member under its new name, the Republic of North Macedonia. A strong signal that NATO's door is and remains open. Our summit comes at a time when some are questioning the strength of the transatlantic bond. And I would not be surprised if we have robust discussions at the summit, including on defense spending. Different views are normal among friends and allies. But I'm confident that we will agree on the fundamentals. North America and Europe stand together. We will take decisions to strengthen our alliance and protect our citizens for years to come. And with that, I'm ready to take your questions.
Okay, we'll go to the Washington Post in the center. One, two, three, fifth row.
Yeah. Hello, Michael Birnbaum from the Washington Post. I wanted to ask, President Trump tweeted in the last hour, the U.S. is spending many times more than any other country in order to protect them. Not fair to the U.S. taxpayer. On top of that, we lose $151 billion on trade with the European Union. Charge us big tariffs and barriers. What is the consequence for allied solidarity of linking trade and defense in the way President Trump is doing?
It confirms that there are different views among allies on different issues, including trade, but also climate change, the Iran nuclear deal, and other issues. I will leave, when it comes to trade, I will leave that to the European Union. When it comes to defense, that's for NATO. And when it comes to defense, my message is that we are actually now stepping up. European allies are stepping up, Canada is stepping up, and we're also doing more together, North America, United States, Canada, and Europe. And I'm absolutely certain that this summit will show that we are able to deliver on security, on defense, despite the disagreements we see on trade and other issues. And my one of my main responsibilities is to make sure that as long as the disagreements on trade remain unresolved, that we minimize the negative effects on the cooperation within NATO. We have been able to do that so far, and I'm confident that we'll once again be able to do that at the summit, because we have a good story to tell. Yes, the burden sharing in the alliance is not fair. That's exactly why European allies and Canada are stepping up. The biggest increase in defense spending last year since the end of the Cold War. All allies have started to increase. More allies spend 2% of GDP on defense. And based on the national plans we agreed last year, we now estimate that European allies and Canada will add $266 billion extra for defense spending from now until 2024. So this is significant. This is really moving in the right direction. And therefore, I'm confident that it will also be reflected at the summit that we are moving in the right direction.
Süddeutsche Zeitung.
Daniel Brossler, Deutsche Zeitung here. Secretary General, you said you thanked President Trump for his leadership. And you said that it is clearly having an impact on the issue of the 2%. Aren't you worried that there might be a negative impact too, that the way President Trump communicates with member states might harm unity in NATO and might actually alienate the populations in some member countries from the alliance?
European allies and Canada should not increase defense spending to please the United States. They are increasing defense spending because it is in their own security interest to do so. That's the reason why they agreed to invest more in defense back in 2014. And that's the reason why they are investing more in defense now. All of them. I'm not saying that they all have spent enough, but I'm saying that we have a very good start with significant increase across Europe and Canada. Then increased defense spending across Canada and Europe also improves burden sharing, which is a good thing. But the reason to invest is not to please the United States. The reason to invest more in defense is because it's needed, because we live in a more unpredictable world. Let me also add that strong NATO is good for Europe, but it's also good for the United States. Two world wars and the Cold War taught us that we are stronger together than alone. And the only time NATO has invoked Article 5 was after an attack on the United States, 9/11, and hundreds of thousands of European soldiers and Canadian soldiers have served alongside U.S. soldiers in Afghanistan. So NATO is a force multiplier for the United States. Allies have stood with the United States on battlefields from Korea to Afghanistan. And the U.S. presence in Europe is, of course, good for European security, but it's also good for the United States. It's a way for the United States to have a platform to project military power to the Middle East and Africa. And European capabilities are also helping to strengthen the protection of the United States. So I believe that we at this summit can show that unity, resolve, solidarity in NATO is in the interest both of America, North America, and Europe, and therefore we will continue to deliver.
Okay, we go to Al Arabiya in the center here.
Nordin Fridi from Al Arabiya News Channel. Mr. Secretary General, 2 days before the Tunisian security services has been deadly targeted by the terrorist organization. I would like to ask you about there should be in Tunisia a kind of lack of training, lack of equipment, proper equipment to fight terrorism. What NATO is providing already? What NATO can provide in the years ahead? And my second question linked to this one, the many terrorist groups acted in Tunisia came from Libya, and you received many times requests from the Libyan official to assist them in build defense institution. Given the crisis in Libya, did NATO manage to do any kind of job or organization or planning to help the Libyan, or still nothing because of the internal situation in this country? Thank you.
Well, we are providing some support to Tunisia already, but I expect that heads of state and government will agree at a package for defense capacity building for Tunisia at this summit. So then we can do more. And that's exactly addressing the issues you mentioned. It will be about helping them to fight terrorism. It's about border security. It's about intelligence. It's about countering IDs and other areas which are important addressing the terrorist threat. We strongly believe that working with partners as Tunisia is one of the best ways we can fight terrorism, because to train local forces, to enable local governments to stabilize their own countries is a much more viable strategy in the fight against terrorism than being forced to deploy our own troops in big combat operations. When it comes to Libya, we are, first of all, supporting the UN-led efforts to find a peaceful, negotiated solution to the crisis, to the conflict. But we are also ready to provide help with institution building, help them to build Minister of Defense, other defense institutions. And we are working on that with the government of Libya now.
We'll take a couple of questions from the front row. We'll start with the gentleman first over there. Yeah.
News agency Interpress News Georgia. Mr. Secretary General, before the summit, the NATO summit, Russian officials have constantly expressed their concerns over deepening relations between Georgia and NATO. Even yesterday, based on diplomatic sources inside NATO, the leading Russian news agency RIA Novosti reported that Georgia may join NATO without a membership action plan, and there are such discussions inside NATO. How would you assess such reports, and what tangible results could Georgia expect from the summit? And also, you have mentioned in your speech that the doors of NATO remain open for everyone who wants to join this organization. So if those doors are still open, why can't we enter, and when Georgia will be able to enter those open doors? Thank you.
I'm certain that the heads of state and government at the summit starting tomorrow will recognize the progress Georgia is making on reforms, on strengthening your defense and security institutions, and we will continue to provide support for Georgia, and we are also grateful for the support that Georgia provides to NATO missions and operations, not least in Afghanistan. So we think that Georgia is really making good progress. I'm not able to give you any specific timeline, but I think that the fact that both Montenegro has joined and that we most likely will decide tomorrow to invite the former Yugoslav Republic of Macedonia to start accession talks shows that NATO's door is open, and we will continue to support Georgia on its way towards membership. And we also expect that heads of state and government will agree that the decision we made in 2008 that Georgia will become member still stands.
Okay, we'll go over there.
I'm Mustafa Sarar from Radio Free Europe. Thank you very much, Mr. Secretary General. As we speak, Saudi Arabia is hosting a two-day conference, peace conference on Afghanistan. How do you assess Saudi's role in the peace process in Afghanistan, and can these regional efforts eventually bring encourage the Taliban to come to the negotiating table with the Afghan government? Thank you.
I think it is important to support an Afghan-led and Afghan-owned peace process. And that's exactly why NATO so strongly has welcomed the peace initiative taken by President Ghani. He invited Taliban without conditions to sit down and start peace negotiations. And he also launched a ceasefire in connection with the Eid holidays. We strongly underline that it is important with support from all countries in the region, but that support has to be to an Afghan-owned and Afghan-led peace process. The reason why NATO is in Afghanistan is to fight terrorism. To do so, we need a stable Afghanistan. And we will continue to be there. The purpose of NATO's military presence is to create the conditions for a peaceful, negotiated solution. Taliban has to understand that they will not win on the battlefield, and they have to sit down and then talk with the Ghani government and find a political solution.
Agence France-Presse at the back. Yeah, over there. Thanks.
Bonjour, une question en français, s'il vous plaît. Le président Trump est assez imprévisible. Lors de sa rencontre avec le dirigeant nord-coréen, il a annulé sans prévenir personne un énorme exercice militaire qui était prévu avec la Corée du Sud. Est-ce que vous avez des craintes qu'avant de rencontrer le président Poutine, pour reprendre son expression et éviter les jeux de guerre, il ne fasse annuler l'exercice qui est prévu par l'OTAN en Norvège à l'automne? Et dans ce cas, quelles seraient les conséquences? Et une deuxième petite question, est-ce que vous partagez l'appel lancé par le président Donald Tusk tout à l'heure à un peu plus de civilité dans les rapports entre les alliés? Est-ce qu'en invectivant les gens, on est encore en train de se considérer comme des alliés? Merci.
I welcome that President Trump will meet President Putin. That's full in line with NATO policies. NATO believes in what we call the dual-track approach to Russia, combining defense with dialogue. We need to be strong, we need to be firm, we need to be predictable, and NATO allies have invested more in defense, are increasing the readiness of forces, and we have battle groups in the eastern part of the alliance. So we show that we deliver on deterrence and defense. That is the best possible platform for political dialogue. Because we don't want a new Cold War, we don't want a new arms race. Russia is our neighbor, Russia is there to stay. And we need dialogue with Russia on many different levels to strive for a better relationship with Russia. But even without a better relationship, it is important to talk to Russia, to manage a difficult relationship, to avoid risks, miscalculations, misunderstandings, incidents and accidents. So with higher tensions, more military activity along our borders, it is actually even more important with dialogue, military lines of communications between NATO and Russia and NATO allies and Russia. Several NATO leaders have met President Putin. NATO, for 2 years, we were not able to convene what we call the NATO-Russia Council. But since 2016, we have been able to convene 7 meetings of the NATO-Russia Council, which is a platform for direct dialogue Russia-NATO allies. So I think it's absolutely the right thing that President Trump meets President Putin. I'm confident that this meeting is important because dialogue is important in times of high tensions. Any measures that can reduce tensions, we welcome. But of course, it is important that NATO stay united. And I welcome the fact that we will also be able to discuss with President Trump ahead of the meeting with President Putin during our dinner tomorrow night, where we have the opportunity to discuss NATO's relationship with Russia. Then, on the other question, as I have said many times during the last months that, yes, there are disagreements and different views. And I expect actually also honest and frank discussions during the summit. But I strongly believe that NATO can continue to be the cornerstone of transatlantic security despite those disagreements. Partly because we have been able to do that before. There has been disagreements between allies as long as this alliance has existed. Back to the Suez Crisis in the 50s, or when France decided to leave the command structure in the 1960s and NATO had to move from Paris to Brussels, our headquarters had to move from Paris to Brussels, or the Iraq War in 2003. So it's nothing new that there are disagreements between NATO allies. And the history tells us that NATO has been able to overcome those disagreements again and again. The second reason why I believe that NATO will continue to be the cornerstone of Euro-Atlantic security is that it is in our interest to maintain NATO. It is good for Europe, but it's also good for North America. The fact that in Europe, you have European forces, you have European infrastructure, which are important not only for the protection of Europe, but also for the U.S. to project the military power to the Middle East and Africa. And the fact that European forces, capabilities, are important also to help to strengthen the protection of the United States. So therefore, and the third reason why I believe that NATO will continue to show resolve and solidarity, bring North America and Europe together, is that that's exactly what we have been doing now for a long time. We have to remember that after President Trump took office, U.S. has increased their military presence in Europe with more troops, more exercises, more investment in infrastructure, pre-positioned equipment. Funding for U.S. presence in Europe has increased by 40% since Trump became president. So actions speak louder than words. Yes, there are disagreements. Yes, there will be some open and frank discussions. But when it comes to substance, NATO is delivering, and NATO is delivering that U.S., Canada, and Europe are working more closely together. And just yet another example of that is that today, Prime Minister Trudeau announced that Canada will stay in Latvia for 4 more years, leading the battle group there. So that's yet another example of how North America and Europe are working together.
Okay, we have the Financial Times just behind.
Thank you very much, Michael Peel, Financial Times. Could you give us the latest figures based on your new expenditure data on how many countries are expected to reach the 2% target by 2025? And secondly, having put these expenditure figures out today, are you not worried that you have Germany, which of course has been a prime target of President Trump, and yet there are no fewer than 11 allies, including 9 EU members, which were spending less as a percentage than Germany last year?
We released these figures because we always release them at this time of the year. So that's a kind of normal cyclus in NATO when it comes to publishing defense spending figures. Earlier this year, we released the aggregated number. Now we release estimates for 2018 for each individual ally. And you can see the different numbers in the press statement. We expect, as in 2014, when we made the decision, only three allies spent 2% of GDP on defense. This year, we expect eight allies to do so: the United States, Estonia, Greece, the United Kingdom, Latvia, Poland, Lithuania, and Romania. You will see, if you look at the charts, that a couple of these countries, they are at, for instance, 1.98, meaning that they are not at this stage fully at 100. But if you read the footnote and the whole table, you will see that these countries, which are not 100% at 2, but at 1.98 or something like that, they have clearly committed that they will meet the 2% target over the year. So they will do something by that. So it's at 2% or extremely close to 2%, eight allies. And these are the initial estimates. Normally, actually, they improve over the year for the whole alliance. So then I think I answered your first question, eight allies, also from three to eight. But the total defense spending partly depends on how many countries reach 2%. But, of course, it's also important what happens with the rest. And the thing is that all allies are increasing in real terms. When it comes to Germany, Germany is also increasing. After years of cutting defense spending, Germany has started to increase. And of course, what Germany does matters, because Germany is so big, the biggest European economy. Last year, they increased defense spending by close to 6% in real terms. This year, Germany will continue to increase defense spending in real terms. And Germany has plans to increase spending by 80% real increase in defense spending from 2014 to 2024 over a decade. So also Germany is really moving in the right direction. But of course, I expect Germany, as many other allies, to do more.
Okay, we'll go late in the front row.
Daniela Cvetković from Serbian National Television. First question is about the region, of course. The role of NATO in the Balkans is becoming more important regarding the progress of Macedonia toward the membership. So how will the policy and support of NATO to Serbia will change or develop when we get that new member of NATO in the region? And do you expect some changes in the superpowers' relations with our region after that Helsinki summit in a few days?
Serbia is a close and highly valued partner of NATO. I appreciate very much that we have been able to step up our cooperation with Serbia. The fact that I expect that NATO allies will invite Skopje to start accession talks will not change our relationship with Serbia. I don't expect that there will be any. I will not speculate about the outcome of the meeting in Helsinki, but I think that anyway, NATO will continue to work with the Western Balkans because we have a history there, we have a presence there with our the presence in Belgrade, in Sarajevo, and of course KFOR, we have many members there, and we also have several partners there. So for instance, Serbia will host NATO's civil preparedness exercise this year in October in Serbia, and that just shows that NATO totally respects the decision of Serbia to not seek NATO membership. That's absolutely fine for us, but we very much appreciate that Serbia continue to work with NATO as a partner, and we are grateful for the cooperation with Serbia.
All set.
Dominika Ćosić, Polish Television, Telewizja Polska. I wanted to ask on American permanent presence military in Poland. Do you expect some decision on this during this summit? Thank you.
The United States and Canada, North America, have increased their presence in Europe, including in Poland. And we have to understand that on the back of, or against the background of the fact that after the end of the Cold War, since the early 1990s, there has been a significant decrease in military presence of Canada and the United States in Europe. The last U.S. Battle tank left Europe in 2013. Now the United States is back with a full armored brigade. So what we see now is a significant increase of military presence of U.S. and Canada in Europe, including in Poland, partly through the battle group. We have four battle groups, one in three Baltic countries and one in Poland. And in Poland, it's led by the United States, but partly also through increased U.S. presence outside the battle group. And the thing is that these U.S. deployments are different places in Europe, but they are part of a rotational presence, exercises, rotational presence, also, for instance, in Poland and the Baltic countries. So we are not planning any new decisions on our posture, but we have increased the readiness of our forces. We have increased the presence of NATO forces in the eastern part of the alliance, including in Poland. And we will make decisions now at this summit to increase our ability to quickly reinforce if needed. So, of course, NATO's deterrence and defense is not only based on the troops we have deployed, but NATO deterrence and defense is also based on the fact that we can quickly move in more forces if needed. Before a conflict breaks out, we need to have credible deterrence. And we will make decisions now on military mobility, on the new command structure, which is about also moving forces quickly, and also what you call the readiness initiative, the 30 battalions, the 38 squadrons, and the 30 battleships that should be ready to be used within 30 days or less. So this is also important for Poland, but it's important for the whole of NATO.
Okay. We have one last question, and we'll go to the third row, lady over there.
Good afternoon. Jovana Jurišić, Montenegrin Daily, Pobjeda. A few days ago, Montenegrin Parliament has made decision to send troops to Kyiv for mission in Kosovo, but Serbia calls this decision as an unfriendly gesture. How do you comment on this decision and how NATO can stop or at least help in calming tensions between these countries caused by this decision? Thank you.
So I welcome that Montenegro is now a member of the alliance. I also welcome that Montenegro contributes to our mission in Kosovo. But I also welcome the close partnership with Serbia. And it's absolutely possible for NATO to have a close and good cooperation with Serbia and then at the same time be present in the KFOR mission. And also, of course, NATO allies contributing to the KFOR mission. Then I am aware that there are challenges related to Kosovo, and therefore we support the Belgrade-Pristina dialogue to try to find a negotiated and solution to the disagreements and the challenges we see in the relationship between Pristina and Belgrade.
Many thanks. This concludes this press conference, but of course, we'll see you tomorrow, bright and early. Thank you.
Thank you so much.